Welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Cavanaugh.
And I'm Will Alexander.
Yes, you are.
Settle down, Will.
Anyway, we've got a great show for you this week. I'm going to talk about, is it a dog show or is it a dog show? Also, about performance events and training tips and things you can do to participate in both performance and confirmation, if you so wish. And also, we're going to get our fact check done on the monkeys and the whiteout story.
Here we
go. Hold your breath. Hold your breath. All that and more on the Dog Show Drive.
I'm born to run down rocky cliffs. Give me grace. Bury my sins. Shattered glass and black holes. Can't hold me back.
Young William, how the heck are you, buddy? How are things up north?
Oh, things are pretty good up north today. We have a little overcast, but my God, it was cold a couple days ago. Jeez.
Yeah, well, it's been a little chilly down here too. And apologies for my voice again this week. I'll one day get that fixed. Anyway, hope you're all well. We have a lot to talk about today, bud. What do you want to start with? We start with a couple of the emails you had.
Yeah, I had a couple questioning about, first of all, there was someone asked our opinion on teaching a dog two disciplines while you're showing them. I know this is a little off topic for us, but they said they had an idea about my thoughts. They weren't sure about your thoughts on it. Now, I don't like overdoing two disciplines while you're showing a dog. When I find myself getting a new dog, I can always tell when they've been trained to do something else. And sometimes you have to work around it. Now, I don't want people to stop doing that because that's part of the sport and it's part of
what they want. You're talking about performance events.
Yeah.
Like agility, whatever.
Right. And sometimes it changes focus from the show dog, but I do find that a lot of dogs will tell the difference by their leads, by what show lead they're on. So that's how I feel about it. And obviously when you get a young dog and as soon as you stop and they sit down, you obviously know someone's taught them that, which is just, it just means we have to work a little harder at what we do. And it's no big deal. I try to explain to them because they're like, oh no, he's sitting. Well, if a judge can't see by that, they're not much worth their salt. But what are your thoughts, Wayne?
Well, I think you can teach, if you can teach them to sit, you can teach them to stand.
Right, exactly.
It's just two different commands. You teach them to do all kinds of stuff. It makes it a little more challenging. But if you're not trained dogs, and boy, all this, there's so much new knowledge and new approach to training dogs. It has been so much more effective and just better for everybody. It's positive reinforcement stuff. And I know for you, Will, and for me showing dogs, you've got to make them like it. You can't. We had the UKC has the biggest hunting dog event in the world, and that's called the UKC World Coonhound Championship. And it goes on for months and narrows down to just a few dogs. And the final four is an impressive sight after hunting for months and months and months. And I remember saying a few words before I presented the trophy once, and I looked around, and all four of these dogs had a long night hunting, and they had their heads on their handler's or owner's leg, and they were looking up at them with great admiration, wagging their tails. And it just came to me that you can make a dog, you can make a dog be a good dog, but if you want to make him a great one, you've got to love him, and he's got to love you, and he's got to be respect there. And that's how those dogs made it through that grueling series of hunts, because they wanted to. They wanted to please their owner. They wanted to please their handler. And I think it's the same thing in performance events. If you you have that bond with your dog, you can certainly teach them how to do two different commands, like sit and stand. Because I got to tell you, it's really important for me with a wolfhound to be able to say sit.
Oh, I'm sure.
And even with the beagles, being the pain in the necks they are about their food, I don't feed them unless they're sitting. They don't get anything. They don't get dinner unless they're sitting before I hand them the food. And if they're barking while I'm making the food, I stop making the food. And they they figure that out real quick. And if I start mixing again, they start barking, I stop again. Well, now, not a word. I open the can, get the bowls ready, not a peep. But those are things we used to just yell, shut up! You know, what the hell did that do? Yeah. You know? So you learn, you know, there are new ways to do these things, folks. And I'll tell you, don't think you have to stick with the old ways, because some of these new trainers and new people have got some excellent training techniques. So I think, now the thing you do worry about, and I wouldn't make it a primary concern, it depends on, if you're specialing a dog right down the line, it's going to be hard to have that going on. I had a case where I was doing a best in show, UKC best in show. I had a spectacular Great Pyrenees in there, who was also an AKC best in show winner, specialty winner, gorgeous, gorgeous Pyrenees. And he was lame. He was quite lame. And I just couldn't do it, being lame. I didn't throw him out of the ring either. It's best in show. I just let it go. And as soon as it was over, she came up to me. She goes, I'm so sorry. He ran an agility today and he hurt his leg. So I'm not sure. And this dog is a true agility diehard. This is not just an excuse. He definitely did that. So, you know, that can happen too. But it can happen when you're unloading your dog, when he jumps out of the truck. He can do that when he steps on a pin brush that somebody put up the wrong way.
Or steps on a beer cap.
Right, exactly. Your neighbor's beer cap, the neighbor's beer cap.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, those things can happen. Whatever it is, I think if you're the owner of a dog, it's your prerogative. And if you want to learn to do things with your dog that please you and make the dog happy, I mean, if you've seen these agility dogs at the line barking, they can't wait to go.
Oh, exactly.
They're so into it.
You want that enthusiasm.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you let your dog enjoy that?
Yep.
Again, if you're going for number one, and how often does that happen? You know, you might want to rethink it.
Or do one first. A little bit, you know.
Or do one first. You know, do agility, obedience, do what you want to do in the performance ring. By then, the dog might be physically matured enough to special in any way. It might work best that way for some people. But yeah, training is a different animal than when I grew up. You know, all those years of yelling quiet. If you said shut up in the fourth size setup, you'd get hit over the head.
Same with my setup. I used to get so angry with them about that. And you can always tell the kids that work for me, because when the dogs are barking, they'll say, quiet, please.
Yep, exactly. Right. We had to say quiet. Yeah.
Quiet, please. No barking, please.
Right. It's true. Yeah, it's a different world. You know, and you can tell. There are dogs out right now, and they're real good dogs. And I can think of half a dozen of them that I would love to tell the handler, you know, if you weren't so hard on him, he might like you. And if he liked you, he wouldn't keep staring at you and wondering what's coming next in a negative way. You've sucked all the positive energy out of him. He doesn't want to please you anymore. He's just he's going through the strides for you, but he doesn't want to do this anymore. And it's because you're so damn hard on him.
And it's a generic way of showing dogs too. Like I'll be sitting listening to somebody and I'll say, is their name really here? Because that's all you say to them is here.
Yeah.
Right, just their name.
And there was a time where I guess you could pop a dog under the chin. Glassford did it nicely. He didn't overdo it. But these people, they're just bang, 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 bang the whole time. Boy, if I'm first of all, how much more ammo do you want to give animal rights people? If a young family walks by with their kid,
where did they learn that habit? Like I can't think of the last channel that really did a lot of work doing was Tommy, and Tommy was more of a stroke than a pass.
Absolutely,
it was a stroke.
And he wasn't popping them.
Where did they learn this habit in their backyard practicing with these? Like, I don't understand.
I don't either. And why can't you hold their head?
Right. And I understand sometimes you want to, you know, it's a bit of a show off when you drop their head. But actually, you think of our friend Eddie, when Eddie showed Miss Fleetwood, who, in fact, he used to work for Tommy. So now that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Then we'll walk down the line, and he'd slowly start stroking her neck down to her chest. And you could see her head would lift up and look at that judge. And that makes perfect sense now, thinking that he worked for Tommy and Andrea for so long.
It does. By the way, you know, I don't think people realize what a good handler Eddie is.
Oh, especially a breed-specific handler.
He was very good at Eagles. Yeah.
He was good at springers. He had a lot of really good. He had good hands. Never got to see him with a lot of different breeds, that's all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's going to school and he's kept an important job, and he's doing a great job now at OFA.
That one made a big influence on me when I watched him show Judy that one time, because just how easy it all looked and how she would look up at that judge, and it was him directing her, but he was directing. He wasn't forcing her to do it.
Here's the other thing with Judy. That expression, Miss Fleetwood Judy, that expression was soft and pleading and kind.
Oh, yeah.
Because it felt so good the way he just stroked her.
Beautiful. Yeah.
But when you get someone that whacks them, that expression is not soft and kind.
No.
And a breed's supposed to be soft and kind. I'm trying to bite this person.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I don't see any need for it. I have the urge to go up to them and go, hey, stand still for a minute. Bang, bang, bang. And whack them in the chin a couple times. Clack those teeth.
You know who else was really good at that was Flavio. Remember watching Flavio show Packers on the table?
Great guy. Yeah.
Same idea. He'd eventually work on those until they were just standing there by themselves. And a lot of dogs, when you let go of them and you think you're showcasing, they tend to lose their outlet. The way he hit certain areas that he touched on them that just made them back up on their toes. And it was such a great thing to watch. I learned so much watching Flavio show dogs.
And what a good guy, too. Horribly missing the sport. There was I'd have the occasional pointer, actually quite a few that I bred that would do this. I could stand kneel in front of them, not kneel, on one knee. And this I stole right from Barlow. One knee in front of them, stroking their chin. And I'd stroke their tail first, and that would stay right out there. And these pointers are pretty rigid dogs. And you come to the front. One knee in front, just stroke the chin. I'm looking at them at the eye, and it looked really cool. I'd have to touch them, but I know if I popped the pointer, I'd lose them for life.
Oh my God, yeah.
It was a gentle, and but I'd always hold their head. I never let go. There's no need to. It was a beautiful head, hand on it or not.
Yeah, it's like presenting. So I find you're presenting that face to the judge, holding on to it. So it's
the same is true for moving them. George does a great job in his handling class. You've probably seen this.
No, never.
Where he takes a cigarette lighter or a rock. And I tell you, the first time, it's wonderful. I stole it. I use it all the time. And I tell someone who's doing this, keep janking on their dog. So just here's this rock or whatever you got. Take it down and back and see how that rock goes. Until that rock smooths out, you're doing too much work on that dog's neck and it's not responding well.
Yeah, we do it with keys now. And George taught me with the keys. We hook the keys on it so it makes lots of noise if you're doing it poorly.
It's
amazing. I was actually talking to somebody in my class last night about that, because when you're free beating a dog, I tend to, like, say you're free beating in front of the center of the ring, I tend to make a bit of a circle and back into it so that the dog is sort of facing you and back, and you're backing up so you have all that room. I also find that way you're not putting the brakes on so much. I find that if you watch some handlers, they jump out in the center of the ring, and they're obviously always sending this signal to their dog they want to break. What's the wrong signal to you want to keep things flowing and keep it, and let them just stop on their own. And I know we're not big fans of the freestyle sometimes, but if it has to happen, it should happen.
Yeah.
Flowing. Why should be still on motion and then stop? Here I am.
It's like a song. You don't put the crescendo at the front of the song. You want to build up to it.
Right.
And if you constantly want them to be 100%, even when no one's looking, they're going to lose interest anyway. Exactly. And by the way, while you're doing all that, I'm looking the other way. I guarantee you, I'm reading the signs for the soda, or I'm watching the TV or the clock, whatever. I don't want to see any of your pet tricks on the door.
They're not pet tricks. Shake a paw.
Yeah, I'll never get over that. I just can't stand it. I hate it. But especially when they come back to you and you want to see them stop, and you can look at the dog's front, and all of a sudden it's whirled around and spinning, and you know, 20, now it's, or it's 10 inches from my chest. It's right there. All I can see is its back.
Yeah, I don't teach that twirl, but I do tweak. They come down and back. I want them to slow down in front of the judge and then stop. But it's off to an angle a little bit. It's never a big deal. So it's,
well, if I have a good front, I'll come right back and stop. If I don't, I'll come at you at an angle.
Well, as a handler, here we go. As a handler, I'll watch some owner handlers. They'll come back, judge, and they'll hope their dog stops right.
Right.
Whereas a handler, I try to make sure the dog stops.
Yes,
right?
of course. Dog show.
The dog can. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, oh, that brings up a topic. Yeah. I noticed our friend Doug Johnson reposted an article you wrote that's getting a lot of airplay now. Dog, is it dog show or show dog? Is that what it's called?
Well, it's dog show and upper caps. And right. Dog upper cap show. Which is the emphasis on that scale. I was very pleased and surprised that Doug did that.
Andrew did it in England. It's all over the place again. So it's
over 100 and some shares, which blows my mind. And over,
it's like when they re brought out Star Wars, the second viewing.
Yeah, except I didn't make any money every time. But the premise is, have we gone too far in putting emphasis on the show instead of the dog? So the title is Dog, capital D-O-G, show, little letters, and just the opposite, dog, or show.
Show, right.
And there's that balance. And I think the handlers have gotten so good, and the owners have gotten so good. The owner handlers have gotten so good at training and trimming. We get concerned about every single hair, and while it's important because you only have a minute and a half to look at a dog, you know, eyes on it, that is, you might get two and a half a dog or three, but you're not looking at it for the whole time. It's important so that you can make, the judge can make a fair assessment, but do we put too much on it? You know, if there's a dog that's not trimmed as well as a trimmed dog, it happens all the time. It's not inheritable.
Right.
Trimming's not inheritable.
And reminds me of a article written by your good friend, Dick Beauchamp. And it was something to do with, they were talking about dogs being shown and trimmed. And he says, they're beautiful dogs, beautiful to watch and look at. Mm-hmm. He says, I'd love to have a portrait over my dinner table or dining room table. But he said, as that breed,
right,
take a second look. So,
yeah. Yeah. We are evaluating breeding stock. It shouldn't matter much about the performance and the free stack heard around the world and the perfect trim.
They're bonuses, though.
Yeah. They're bonuses. But I wonder how many dogs get lost in the sauce. Hey, it's happened to me. I had not too long ago, I had a bitch that I saw in the ring. I noticed that she's got some quality, but I had a lot of them that day, a whole lot of them. And her head was down, her tail was dragging. She flattened out, and I only going to move them a couple times. And if she does it every time, what am I going to do? I can't tell right. when she's moving like that. And, you'll get those along the way. And sometimes you go back and go, well, Kavanaugh, you were supposed to be evaluating breeding stock. And, you know, you should have given more allowance. Well, if they're all close.
Right. Depends on the size.
What am I going to do? Wow.
Right. I've been to a dog show where I remember showing, I'll have to say this, I'll try to leave the names. I remember showing a dog to a very prominent judge, and I put the dog on the table, and I forget where I was, but it wasn't very strong competition. And I made an excuse. I said, oh, she's in the season. And the judge said, well, you know what? She could be really sick. It was not going to matter today.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you just have to really, and you know, this question came up this week from somewhere to me about puppies. A person was very upset that puppies were winning above the puppy class or whatever it might be. And how do we know it's going to turn out? And with that as a premise, how do you know when it's going to turn out, what it's going to turn out to look like? She answers the question herself. Because I said, you know, when you're You just said, how do I know it's going to look like a year from now? I don't.
You don't.
I don't know how that's special. It's all done about and matured before you're all special. I don't know what he's going to look like a year from now either. He might go coarse.
Right.
You know, we're judging on the day. On the day. And if it's a puppy that you think has tremendous quality, that you're wanting to breed for, you look in there and go, I'd like to breed to that dog. You know, that should be on your radar. It's. I'm not saying you should go out of your way, but if you've got an exceptional puppy, you're judging them all as they are in the ring in the moment. Right. And the same goes for 2-year-old, 5-year-old, 10-year-old, whatever it might be.
Well, there's no question. I have seen dogs who are in their prime. They look like $1 million. And then if someone overdoes and shows them a year later, that's not the same dog.
I had a pointer who I knew. This bugger better get out early. He better get out quick because he's going to be done by the time he's 2.5, 3. And he was group winner, tons of winning. I mean, he did an incredible amount of winning in a 4-month period from like, I think it was 12 months to maybe 16 months. And he was never heard from again. Lovely dog, but he looked, and then at the end of the day, he was just way too much.
Right.
Way too much. You judge him on the day. That was like, the judge.
I'm pretty much now from what I was in my prime.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it depends on who's looking. Right? If you're looking for, you know, suave and sophisticated and an older gentleman, then you're certainly not the guy. I have to go somewhere else. But at least they're looking well. At least they're looking. And remember, you're not this good looking at the mall.
That's right. I'm not famous at the mall. That was Lindy Brown.
Someday we'll tell that story.
That's Lindy Brown's favorite story.
Oh, it's mine too. It's great. Hey, we had some good news on a very tough news story about a dog in a van. I want to talk about that, Will.
Yeah, that's upsetting, isn't it? When it was a story about, I don't want to get it wrong, but the owner of the dog left their dog in the vehicle. I think the vehicle was running, but I can't remember. But no matter what, the keys were left in it, and they went off to either get a coffee or check out or something. And their car was stolen, their vehicle was stolen with their dog in it. Now, it has a very happy ending. You know, some people jumped in there, and the dog was found and safe and sound. But it's just a warning to everybody out there. To don't let your dog get in that position. Like, you're in charge. Either have two sets of keys, if you want to leave it running, lock it. But just be very careful. You never know what's going on. And chances are this individual that took this vehicle wasn't looking for a dog. They wanted the vehicle. You know, it just happened that the dog was in. And that happened to a very good friend of mine up here, Shirley Dowser. She had a very famous beagle, Bayou Oaks English Leather. She had left him in her vehicle, ran into the store, and came out, and her vehicle was stolen. Wow. And the person had no idea that Spencer was in the back seat. Spencer was retired at that point and sleeping, and he just thought Shirley was back and taking us home. He probably shot, who are you? But now they had another happy ending. Spencer was found. But it was a big deal. Like, it was all over the place, you know, Spencer being gone. And Shirley was a wonderful lady, and she had some beautiful beagles over the years. And Spencer was her best friend. Like, he went everywhere with her.
So they did get him back?
They got him back, yeah.
Well, that's the good news here, too. And I think it's a salute to the dog show world and community. Boy, the flags went up immediately. Everyone was looking. No one was blaming anyone. They were all just going to find that dog. And I think that's finally how the dog was returned. Everybody was on guard, and it was really it was a great moment for the way the sport comes together in these tragedies. In this case, it didn't turn out to be a tragedy, fortunately, and the dog is happy and healthy and home. But you know, I was just this morning at the doctor, it was telling me that, yesterday one of his patients had left their dog in the car, and, it's winter here. Dog wasn't, and it's only, you know, it's only like 20 degrees Fahrenheit, 30 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's not like the dog is going to freeze to death either. In this situation, it was a quick appointment, but she had left her keys in the car, and the dog had locked the doors.
Oh, that's known
to happen. It's happened to a lot of us, right? Sure, it's happened to me. And the only person who had enough spare key was an hour away. and they had to wait. And he said, it's just a good thing it wasn't 80 degrees out.
Yeah.
And he had a, you know, a good talk with the patient, but about he's a real dog lover, why he shouldn't do that. It's just, we all can make mistakes, but I can tell you in Cheryl's new car, when you get in and you drive it, when you turn it off, a thing comes on the dashboard and says, check the back seat.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Check the back seat. It's for people that leave their babies in the back and, you know, just forget.
Right.
They've got three kids, two came with her, and all of a sudden, no, where's the baby, you know, or the dog is going to be too hot back there. Yeah, it's a great little message goes across the dashboard.
First I've heard of that.
Oh. Yeah, you just have to be careful.
Years ago, I used to show for a gentleman named William Gear. He was just a great...
Oh, gosh, yes, the best.
And he came to the kennel one time, and he had had the... he always traveled with Buddy Beagle in the front seat with him.
Yeah.
In the kennel for some other reason, but he was well retired at that point. And he... did his business, and he went back out to his car, and he came right back, and he asked me if I had a hammer. I'm like, sure, what do you need a hammer for? So I gave him the hammer. I watched him. Buddy had locked the door on him. Mm-hmm. So he, being Bill, he just broke the window.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. As it was warm, was you know, wasn't hot, but oh yeah, he was so nonchalant. Do you have a hammer, Will? Yeah, for sure, Bill. And then we're watching, and he goes out and he smashes his window, brings the hammer back, and please.
All right, true confessions. This has got to be 40 years ago, 30 years ago. I was working for the AKC, and I had rented a car, and it was Westchester, and I lost the keys. Or I left him in the car. I left him in the car and I couldn't get in. And I took a big rock and tried to break the window. Let me tell you how hard it is to break the car window. I mean, and I'm looking like an idiot in the park, just bashing this thing. Finally, it went, I mean, it went into 10,000 little pieces. And I'm late and I got to get back to Newark Airport and fly home. And so I decide, well, I'm going to see what happens here. I stopped at a shop, at a, you know, car wash, the shop vac, and vacuumed out the 10 million pieces of glass. And I put all the windows down and returned the car. Not a problem.
Exactly.
They never called. I was waiting for the call. I was going to go, yeah, I didn't mean to tell you about that. Here's the check. But yeah, you can ask, so be careful. And I shouldn't talk because when I was actively showing dogs every weekend, it wasn't uncommon for someone to announce, we found the keys, and everyone knows they usually were mine.
I have a friend that shows that he's very good at getting into people's cars when they lock their keys.
Oh, yeah. Slim Jim.
He just knows it. But he uses he has a coat hanger. He's old school. And I used to always tease him. Remember one time I had to go find him because a friend of mine locked their keys in the car, and I found Joe and said, Joe, can you help him out? Blah, blah, blah. He said, yeah. So off he went, and his wife was there, and I got on my phone. She said, what are you doing? Well, I'm calling the cops. I said, you know, there's some big guy in front of the arena breaking into people's cars. Just for fun. Yeah. Don't you do that.
Well, new cars is not so easy to use.
No,
those.
It's not easy at all.
Yeah, you go right to Paul Locksmith. Don't mess around.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that. Boy, there sure are some fancy rigs going dog show these days, aren't there, Will?
Oh, wow, yeah.
Don't you? Custom fitted, bespoke dog trucks and vans.
There you go, and you walk into some parking lots, like, oh my God, how do they do it? But yeah.
It's like going to an RV show.
Yeah. And I was never one to have a guy had a box truck, and that's as fancy as I got.
The Winter Prize.
Yeah, the Winter Prize. Eric, and I just drove by. It's actually, I'd given it to a buddy of mine when I retired because he had a landscaping business. So I gave it to him. I see it all the time now.
Do you really?
I'm pretty sure it should be somewhere with velvet ropes around it. But
I believe it should be, Will, at the Hall of Fame, the Dog Show Hall, or maybe at the Museum of the Dog in New York City.
Yeah.
That would be a perfect place for it. It'd be a perfect place for it with the little velvet ropes around. And you always kept it so shiny on the outside. Not But the wheels are really pretty. The rust.
The wheels were pretty.
They had nice autumnal tones. The rust. The wheels are.
They never let me down, though. I remember being in line at the Florida show, the YouTube shows, and all these guys are talking about their new trucks, how they're in the garage, and here I was, the Luna Prize.
The Luna Prize. That's right. She was dependable, and the story she could tell.
Oh my!
Wonderful. Wonderful. Anyway, I want to also talk about something that popped up, an email from someone without a name, who I'm sure they have one. They just want to share it. Talking about these shows that are opting out of junior showmanship. And the first time I saw it, I'd forgotten this rule is already in effect.
The shows themselves are opting out of junior handling?
It's not out of junior handling. It's out of junior handling, including the doodles.
Oh, okay.
The crossbred dogs. And you have a choice to not allow them in junior showmanship. So this is the first month that the rule has been in place where you can show crossbred dogs in junior showmanship. And it'll be interesting to see how many shows do, how many clubs do choose to opt out and just have it regular junior showmanship like it's always been, or will they actually let in the mixed breed dogs? It's going to be interesting to see. Yeah, I don't know.
It's pretty slope, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be fun to see at the end of the year what percentage of clubs allowed the crossbreds. And I can see there's arguments can be made at dog shows. You know, I don't want those dogs in here. And then people, why don't you let those dogs in here? So it's going to be, it'll be fun to see how it sorts out. Mm-hmm. I still don't think it's the best way to get kids in the junior showmanship, but it's what they're trying. So
we'll there's so much more for them to do with their dogs, and they don't have to go to juniors, really.
Hey, by the way, before I forget, Will, we've hired a fact checker, a fabulous fact checker, done a lot of work, and it does seem it was Mike Nesbitt's mother from the Monkees. Mm-hmm. Who invented whiteout. And the story is even better because she was a typist in a typing pool. That's all she was. She wasn't even somebody's secretary. It was a bunch of people who typed for the whole company. And she invented whiteout. And she sold it for $47 million. And this is back in the 80s where that was worth about $2 billion.
He didn't need the Monkees.
No, but the kids all got $50 million.
Oh wow!
Because if you put $47 million in the right hands, it's $100 million real quick. Right. And she was able to invest it well, and a very smart woman. And I love
it. Good to have that chance to try doing that.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice? But it does show the American dream's alive and well.
Yeah, that's an amazing story.
And I think it's fun. Now I was thinking about it after I read that, or after my fact checker read that. Yeah. And I thought to myself, I wonder about that company paid the $47 million if they ever got their money out of it, because pretty soon after that, word processors were prominent. You didn't probably need a lot of whiteout anymore.
But they still sell it. I still have it.
Yeah, sure. But you used to paint an entire, you didn't need it in gallon cans with a big paintbrush back in the day. Now you can just go in there and fix stuff electronically.
And all those creepy kids in at school, they used to catch flies and paint their heads with. Isn't that awful? I was one of those people.
I never heard of that.
I remember that being done, and people were just, kids can be cruel sometimes. There's always that one that wants to do stupid things, and then they end up on criminal minds.
That's true. That's probably exactly true. There is a correlation.
Yeah, I'm sure there is, yeah.
Very sharp correlation between that. We did some work out in California years ago with the Pet Council I was a member of, looking into research about just that. And they were trying to work with the police and say, hey, if the person has been involved in domestic violence, you really want to keep an eye on their animal cruelty as well, because the correlation is pretty common that you would do both, unfortunately.
Right. It's very true. You read about that all the time. You know, the first signs of these serial killers is animal abuse.
Well, that's happy news.
Yeah, how we bounce around from top. We start off at whiteout, and we end up with criminal minds, EAU stuff.
Very smart. But on a high note.
Mean we don't focus? What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
It's probably that, probably a little bit of that. But on a good note, you've got your first judging assignment. Well, your first official CKSC.
Yeah, I noticed. I even looked on, we have a site up here called Canuck Dogs, where this woman, Sue, just does an amazing job and runs the, you get to find all the events in Canada. And I kept checking to see, you know, just nonchalantly checking.
Yeah, right. Like every 10 minutes.
Was published. It wasn't from, well, yesterday I looked and there it was.
See that?
Oh my God.
Frame that one, buddy. Frame
it. Wasn't just at a post office. It was actually there. The dog event saying I was judging. So
now, and you got an entry for where you are. It's spectacular.
Yeah, it's like 50 plus dogs for my first half of the group. I'm really looking forward to it. So
yeah, and you only need 61, right?
Something like that, yeah. For the but because they average things out across the country and they come up with a number that they think you'll get it. Because I mean, you've got to take into the fact that our shows are so much smaller.
So you could do this in two shows.
Yeah, but you still have to have the three permit assignments.
Oh, you do, yeah. Well, three's pretty quick in and out, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Now, it's the same here, three times as a permit judge, but you have to have dogs present in competition.
Yeah.
And that can take 20 times.
Well, exactly. And I'm sure that's what I'm sure that they couldn't do it up here because people would stay on permit forever in some
ways,
because they just don't have the competition in their area.
And you know, really, well, we talked about this a long time ago, but for me, when you're not going to be as good judging the first year, no matter how many courses you took and how famous you are, it's just not going to happen. And what we tend to think of is, that's as good as that judge is going to be. And that's not true. They get better. And it's the same thing with, you know, if you're making someone do 9 permit assignments, the judge in your country, yeah, they're getting more practice, I guess. But they're not going to be perfect in 9 shows or 3 shows or 20 shows. It could take years of judging certain breeds before you get to figure it out.
Get a handle on it. I was talking to our good friend Doug Belcher this morning about something, and we were talking about certain judges that are used to seeing a certain type of dog in their area.
Yes.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what they lean towards, but you have to judge what's in your ring. And the real judge of it all is when you see them in the ring with 50 dogs, then they get their choice, and then you'll see what they actually do lean towards type wise. But it's not fair to say, oh, so and so only puts up, you know, the mountain version of the Boston Terrier.
Right.
But if that's all he ever sees, then he's got to award somebody. So
we've all got a template in our head.
Right.
And if that template was formed, and this isn't a conscious thing, if that template was formed by seeing dogs win in a particular area, well, that's going to be your template. Hopefully over time, and you can make more balance out of that template, but there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's the same thing goes, you say, oh, you should be a good judge. He breeds so-and-so. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be a good judge, because what he may have bred that breed, but what did he breed or what did they breed in that breed?
Yeah. And not only that, there's so much more to it. You know, there's people who can stand outside the ring and get it right every time. But put them in there, it's a different story.
Right, when it comes down to 2 minutes a dog. And
Yeah, it's not as easy as you think, folks. And it would be great for everyone that had a complaint about a judge to change suits and see how it worked. But we do have a good number of good judges. You know, there's a lot of bashing of judges in the world these days. And, you know, they're all arounders, and they don't know anything about my breed. I bet they know something about your breed.
Right.
And I'll bet you that their general knowledge of a breed goes a long way while they're learning. Like if you were given a breed you weren't familiar with, Will, and you had 3 tries at it for your permit license, whatever, you'd struggle through there before you learn the finer points, but you wouldn't make any mistakes. And at the end of the day, a diversity of opinions is what's important. If the same mountain style Boston Terrier you made up, if that was the only one.
Just made up. I don't want messages from Boston.
That's right. But if that was the same, if only that type of dog, I shouldn't say type, that style of dog was the right one, pretty boring world. We need a little bit of each. You know, in setters, we got the East Coast and the West Coast.
Oh, we talked about that before. It's amazing the differences.
Yeah.
And you can recognize that. You can say, oh, that dog's from so-and-so area. Sure. It doesn't make it wrong. It's just, that's just.
Make it wrong.
That's how it works. You got to just.
You have to balance that in your mind. Yeah. And, you know, they were all really, the more I think about that, you know, on the West Coast, there's typically in many breeds, probably all, a very popular sire who's used over and over and over again. They're going to look alike. Yeah. You got a dog on the opposing coast that's been doing a lot of winning and siring a lot of winning dogs. He gets bred a lot. And yeah, they're going to look alike. Maybe a couple generations removed, but it's still there. That style is still there.
I mean, look how much of an impact Guys and Dolls had on dogs in the West Coast.
And to me, when those dogs came east to New England, we didn't even know what breed they were.
Well, they're very different, but they had their good sides too. There were some beautiful dogs that they produced out there.
Well, we had we didn't have the best fronts in New England. They did, and they kept great top lines too, and ours not necessarily. We had way better heads and eyes and ears and type and bone. But, you know, those lines have been crossed together quite well. Yeah. And that's what happens over time, too.
Llewellyn and the two guys in England that did the English setters, right?
Yeah, Llewellyn and Laverack.
Yeah, Laverack sounds like, oh, Laverack. That was the guy who used to show once.
That's right. Well, the Llewellyns were, the two of them were both into field trialing. One preferred a better looking dog and they finally went their separate ways. One becoming a Llewellyn setter, which is people would think of as the hunting dogs, and then the Lavericks that we see today. Neither probably emanated, probably a dog that was owned by Llewellyn and Laverack. They probably exist in every pedigree if you went back far enough.
Yeah, but it's amazing. You can generalize, you look at it. Let's stick with setters. You can still generalize which side they came from.
Sure.
You can still figure it out. Now they've refined and made themselves a little different in style and looks, but you know, I think they start off with Laverack. Oh, they start off with Llewellyn side.
I got to tell you, I love a little 35-pound English setter, a little field trial dog with hardly any hair, one patch over the eye, in front of the fireplace, straight at 12 o'clock. And that dog in front of the fireplace, you know, that's a good photo. That's a good painting, you know. I mean, they're great little dogs. And what do you do with that? You know, we had this exercise in another registry where the pointer standard was there until I got there and rewrote it, as we did a lot of standards. And, you know, in England, the moors are very short. There's not a lot of tall grasses and tall prairie grasses and things. And you're not going to need a tail that goes straight up in the air to find the dog. In fact, that would be detrimental because gun dogs that did that before guns, before the flintlock gun, where you're tossing nets over the dog, the tail would be a problem, be an issue, be in the way of throwing that net. So we have the tails lowered, and that's where the standards come, right? Right off the back, that's the breed standards all say. But when you come to America with those pointers and setters, and you're running in prairies with tall grasses and cover, you don't have nets anymore. You've got guns. You better find them. And having that tail at 12 o'clock became the preference.
That makes sense, yeah.
So how do we, when we judge them on the breed standard at hand, but how do you make allowances for those things? I remember when I'm judging in Ireland or England or anywhere over that part, you know, my son was just asking about this, about titles and dogs in different countries. A champion in England is a full champion. He's also qualified in the field. So if you see champion, you know, Will Skipper over there, he's qualified. Yeah, he had a great time. It qualified in the field as well as a show. You'll see SHCH for show champion. And that's just because they've only qualified in the ring. And, you know, I don't think people get even carried away about that anymore, but the initial premise was excellent. Mm-hmm. And for the field trial guys, if they can get qualified in the show ring, they are just delighted. You know, they're just delighted. So different ways to look at it in different countries. But we've separated the hunting dogs from the bird dogs in many breeds a little bit too much. but not in Vizslas, not in short hairs, not in Chesapeakes. Not, you know, there's been breeds consistently. I mean, Brittany's come to mind immediately, right? And short hairs. They look the same in the field. Those dogs, so many of those dogs have titles in both areas and relatives that do. And some of them the same dog when in the, you know, in the field or in the show ring. And think about that. Those breeds haven't gotten terribly exaggerated. Brittany's and short hairs have stayed true.
They really have. I was at my, I have a class I do each week, and I remember this Brittany woman coming in, and I was so taken by her dogs. I asked her how she'd done with them. Oh, they all have hunting titles. I said, what about dog shows? They'd never been. She'd never been to a dog show. Yeah. And they were beautiful.
Yeah. I'll bet. Yeah. I'll bet. You know, we just, those, they're a good example of how not to get your breed to suffer from incremental exaggeration. They've got to work. They can't get, now there are examples of extremes in both of those breeds. I can name some, but generally speaking, they're true to the core.
They really are.
You gotta love it.
Pictures and they match. Like, and I have to say a lot of breeds that way. I look back at, not a lot, but there, you look back at, we talked about this earlier, the Skidby dogs or
Stone Gables.
Yeah, they were beautiful dogs that could compete today. You know,
sure. Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, it's a thing that, it's a whole show we can do, Will, and maybe we will. I wrote it probably a year ago. Oh, no, I wrote it in 2020, October 2020, because I just checked. It's Type versus Style is the title of the article. And it's it goes back to saying, okay, Yvette Jenner said this is the best poodle he ever saw. And Frank Sabella said this is the best poodle they ever saw. And it matched the standards so well that it won Best in Show at Westminster. That dog today couldn't finish. The standard hasn't changed. The standard hasn't changed one bit. But the look of the dog that, in that breed, in standard poodles, and many breeds, our interpretation has changed, right? And those are things that they're great, PhD questions for some kid doing research. How do these trends happen? But so many of the best in show winners at Westminster from the 60s and 70s wouldn't be competitive today. I would say Rock Falls Colonel could, the English Setter. He certainly could. And there are some examples. But what about my own Brucey? You'd probably throw him out of the ring for lack of merit. One of the greatest cockers that ever lived. But he did not look like today's American Cocker. It's fun to see is it evolution or devolution? I don't know, Will. I just don't know anymore.
That's for another show. That's a good show, though. We should write that down.
Well, I'm running out of voice. I'm sorry. One of these days I'll get sorted out. But
I thank you, Wayne, because you know what? Every podcast that we do, I learn something from you.
And I do, too, from you. and I hope somebody out there is learning something, too. It's nice to know that you're listening. So please, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm listening. Oh, sorry.
No, I know you have to.
It's just you and I again.
This is the show.
Yeah, we paid so much to do this.
It's just ridiculous. It's $47 million, just like the Whiteout.
Oh, I know.
God. We sold the show for $47 million. A lot of people don't believe it. We did. That's what it went for. I think we sold it to Gillette. It's Gillette, because I don't know why I said that, but it could be. Anyway, it's for sale. Show's for sale. If anybody wants to buy it, they can buy both of us. Anyway, thanks again for helping us get down the road. I hope you all did well, and hope you're keeping your dog safe and yourself safe in this crazy time. I'm heading to, I hope that the body is able, hope I'm up to it. But looking forward to going out and doing combined next week. They don't call it that anymore. Only us old people do.
Yeah.
The Winter Garden.
Winter Garden specialties. I'm going to do my best to be out there if I don't get some crazy schedule for my work here. I'd like to come. What day are you doing English Setters again?
Saturday is English Setters. Sunday is Irish Setters. And Saturday is Short Hair Sweeps too.
So that's the 22nd.
Yeah.
All right.
I think so. Yeah, it is. Anyway, it'll be nice to be able to get home and not have to stay around for the garden. Not that I wouldn't want to, but you got to be feeling up to it to hit that many days in a row. And, this isn't my moment. Anyway, we look forward to your cards and letters. Keep the cards and letters. Will you ever get a card? Probably not.
I haven't got a card yet.
Not even a letter. No. Keep your emails and FB messages.
Emails and, you know.
Yeah, DMs and SM, whatever, all you got. Just keep them coming, and we'll try to get to your topics. Thank you very much. Will, really, it's been wonderful, buddy.
Yeah, it's good to get that. Let's stay safe out there, everybody, and party on, Wayne.
Absolutely. Party on, Will. Have a good day.
You as well.
Party on, Bert.
I'm born no run, way. Way.
Down rocky cliffs. Give me grace. Bury my sins. Shattered glass.
So Ernie can use this in the blooper reel.
That's can right. Hold me back from where I need to go.
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Quit taking yourself damn seriously.